Hi, welcome to the Final Film Podcast. My name is Jack, your co-host. No, shit!
We're starting strong.
I tried to like speed run that shit. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Film Podcast. I am your host, Jack, with my co-host, Laffy Pants. I mean, Sid.
Hi, everybody.
How's it going, Sid?
I'm going well. Is going well, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing good.
What? Yeah. We're doing great over here, clearly.
Doing pretty good, yeah. So, today we watched The Uninvited from 1944.
You're uninvited! Yes, we did.
How did you like it, Sid?
I thought this was fun. I hadn't seen this before. I liked it. I like the gothic style of gothic novels and horror movies, so I was kind of used to the pacing. I did figure the twist out pretty early, which is rare for me. I'm not usually good at that. So, yeah, it was different. I liked it. What about you?
Yeah, I did like it. I think it shows its age. Again, 1944. This is the oldest movie we've watched now. Psycho in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't your grandma's movie. Or maybe it is.
It is.
But we were kind of talking earlier, and the dialogue kind of is like similar to Psycho, like 16 years later. Like it's,
yeah,
the dialogue doesn't really change. It's that, you see here, listen here, buddy, you know, like it's like a lot of that stuff.
Well, except that originated in the 40s movies, and it's very like they set their scene in London, or they're saying, you know, we drove 2 hours away from London, so they're supposed to be Londoners, but it's just very clearly people with the transatlantic accent who like throw in a London accent every once in a while and then forget. It's amazing.
I didn't hear much of an accent except for maybe the maid who sounded Irish or something.
That was a terrible Irish accent.
Okay. She acted her ass off, Sid. Okay.
Oh, boy.
But one detail that we cannot forget to mention is that it was an hour and 40 minutes. Which
I thought of you. I was like, oh, it's so close to Jack's rule.
Right on my line. Right on my line. Or right above it, rather. Stop it. Stop it. Sid.
It's like 20 minutes under 2 hours. Sid, so you should have been having a fucking field day, Jack.
Not good. It's over my limit. 10 minutes.
Right.
So this movie's already on my shit list before I even started it.
It's under your rule, but that's fine.
This is just Sid's rule now.
It's not. You started the rule. You said if it's under 2 hours, then you like it.
I did not say that. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know what? We're gonna move on.
Okay.
We're gonna move on to who directed this movie. And that person, his name is Lewis Allen.
Lewis.
Got that, L.A.? All right. Writers were Dottie Smith. Smith? Yeah. Frank Partos and Dorothy McCardle.
Mm.
Yeah, that's who they are. So they were involved in this movie.
Uh-huh.
I do. Are you okay, Sid?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very okay. All right.
I'm just listening to you give me facts.
It's terrible, I know. So one fact I will point out. So one of the associate producer on this movie, Charles Brackett, he actually approached Alfred Hitchcock to... He invited him to read the script and kind of, I think he wanted him to direct it, but Hitchcock was unable to do that. So he basically read the script and gave back his suggestions to Brackett, the associate producer. So that's kind of an interesting connection there.
Yeah, he kind of helped.
Yeah, a little. He read it and like, yeah, okay.
Who
knows what the notes were? Yeah.
Yeah, true.
There was also another thing where apparently, so one of the stars, Gail Russell, who was very young in this movie. I think she was like 18 or 19.
Yeah, she was a baby.
Yeah. So her coworkers and the director were not terribly happy with her. The associate producer said that her performance was like amateur. Oh. And one of the writers even said that she had a similar distaste for Russell, the actress. Filming was difficult with her. Apparently she would cry on set with her mom and claim she had like ailments. but it was just because she didn't want to wear a certain hat for a scene, which I guess is the one where they're driving.
Oh, so she was a diva.
A little bit, I guess.
Tiny baby diva.
Yeah, they were saying, I feel bad for her because, like, she seemed like she did fine in this movie, but they were saying that the performance in the film was, like, manufactured, and she would basically say, like, 5 or 6 lines, and they would have to, like, cut it up, and she would, like, burst into tears or something like that, so.
Really? Okay.
And unfortunately, she had not drunk alcohol before, and she began drinking it to calm herself, like, before filming, and that's what she ended up. Yeah, she didn't live a very long life, and it was because of alcohol. So it's like almost this movie that, yeah, it was like started, which is just like, Jesus.
Jeez, that's a dark history. Okay.
Yeah, well, maybe we cut that out because, you know, Jesus, I'm depressed now. It wasn't that sad when I was going over it the first time. But anyway, let's move on to taglines. So, tagline, the greatest chiller of the year. And every one of these has this where it's like, this is like a print ad. And this one was in the Lubbock Morning Avalanche.
Oh, yeah.
November 8th, 1944. All caps, it says. So I guess these were all like written as ads in different papers.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah. Another one is A Mysterious Picture, yet one of the best production of this year. They're all just kind of like newsy ads, like, you know, mystery, suspense, like that kind of stuff. So I don't really know if it actually has a tagline, but I guess the greatest chiller of the year. Sure. We'll give it to that one.
I think my favorite one is the strangest, most haunting love story since Rebecca.
Sid.
Look at that. I'm prepared, Sid. Baby. Yeah.
God.
He did it.
But I hated that tagline, so.
Oh, okay. Fuck off.
I'm just kidding.
Cool. Glad I'm here.
I'm glad you looked it up, though. It was awesome.
Uh-huh.
One thing I will say. You know, I could not find a budget for this movie. Now, I didn't look very hard, but I still couldn't find one. So what I could find is that this movie...
Well, it was filmed in Arizona, wasn't it? It was, like, filmed in Phoenix. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, filming locations. Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh.
Who knew?
Welcome, Arizona, to the table.
Which, like, considering all the cliffs and ocean they filmed, I don't understand that, but...
I don't either. Apparently, it made... it says... It was among the highest grossing pictures in the United States in 44, with rentals over $500,000 US, which is equivalent to $8.3 million in 2 years ago, in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever it made, I'm sure it far surpassed whatever it cost to make, because it was...
Yeah, it was really popular.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like 13th most popular movie of that year, of 44.
That's really good.
Yeah. It also came, I forgot to mention this, it was released February 10th, 1944. So not even close to the spooky season.
Right.
It's probably a Valentine's Day movie.
Yeah. How romantic. That's probably where the romantic tagline came from.
Yeah, I guess that is a good point. That is a good point.
Mm-hmm.
So the synopsis of the movie is a composer and his sister discover that the reason they are able to purchase a beautiful Gothic seacoast mansion very cheaply because of the house's unsavory past.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty general, but that's
very
that's
general.
So before we get going,
yes.
I think we need to talk about Helen and her very short time with us.
Yes. Okay. Well, Helen was great. We appreciated her work on Alien, and we're sorry to see her go.
That's a very short you, Sid.
Okay. It's very sad. Helen was very excited after we filmed or recorded Alien and was super pumped.
Pour one out for her real quick. Oh, sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. She wanted to pursue her career in becoming an astronaut. So she thought she would start doing like zero G testing just to kind of like get herself ready to go up into space. And she thought the best way to do that was to go on a roller coaster ride, like the most dangerous roller coaster on the planet.
The Mamba.
And she thought, yeah, exactly. And she was like, you know what? I don't even need any seatbelts. And the superintendent person was like, no, you need seatbelts. And she's like, okay, for sure. Wink, wink. And then when they got up to the top, she just took the safety bar off and thought she could handle it. And for a minute, she lived her astronaut dreams, flew up into space. But unfortunately for her, gravity exists and she came crashing down to Earth. And it's very sad. Rest in peace, Helen.
Yeah. She really saw a life kind of black and white, you know, ones and zeros. But it was a short life.
My God.
What?
Jack. We're very sorry to see Helen go, but what?
I am sorry. You're sorry to see Helen's butt go? Is that what you said?
Yes, I'm sorry to see Helen's ass go. Anyways, welcome, Herbert. Rest in peace, Helen.
I really hope they are able to piece her back together for the sequel.
Oh my gosh.
I hope so too.
Me too. She was very good at her job, so.
She was.
Are we talking Herbert Hoover or?
I do own one.
Mm-hmm.
I call it Herbert's Hoover.
Gross.
It sucks.
Yeah, I bet it does.
It's a bit of a dirt devil, huh?
Oh my god. I don't have a vacuum joke. We should just get started.
A whirling dervish.
Stupid. How did we get to vacuums? That's so good. Oh my gosh.
Let's plug this thing and suck up the plot.
Wow, that was really good.
I'll go back to my booth now.
Yeah, you got a race to announce. You better get up there.
The uninvited coming in third. Coming in third, up and then the uninvited. Slowly preceded by Slowpoke. And in the lead is You All Want It.
Oh my god.
Wow. Horse names are weird.
Horse names are weird.
They are. I love the horse names. Mm-hmm. Like Kicker. Anyway.
I have a gambling addiction.
You're the announcer. That's dangerous.
We'll discuss
that. I think I have an inside track.
Yeah, we'll discuss that after the show, Herbert.
Okay.
This can all be cut.
We should move on.
The magic of editing.
So the uninvited.
Is that my cue? Okay, thank you. Yeah. So, with all these older movies, we get a nice, we get a very lovely, ear-piercing orchestral score that's just slammed in our ear holes.
Ear-piercing? It's like romantic music.
It was very shrill. I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness.
Was this me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, they had nice, very nice orchestral music. And we got the introduction of the actors and actresses who we will get into as we meet them in the movie here.
Mm-hmm. It's very tinny back in those days.
Very tinny.
It was tinny.
That shrill, tinny.
Tinny
what's the
is
difference?
Not shrill has a negative connotation. Hush. Tinny is fine.
Okay. So it opens up on waves crashing on the shore with a monologue from a narrator about the spookiness of this place that we're about to learn about, which is...
Yes. Well, wait. Did you... Sorry. Along with your tinny music, did you see the part where it said it's based on a book?
No, it was right down the tinny music
comment. Yes! No, it was written by... Based on the novel by Dorothy McCardle.
Thank you, Sid.
You're welcome.
You, I said that's why there's
doing a book club.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would be curious to see what the book was like versus this. Mm-hmm. How they adapted it back then. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll give it a shot. Oh, that is the writing credit. Dorothy McCardle. Okay, I'm sorry. Dorothy McCardle. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm dumb as hell. Everyone knows that now. So
now.
So it opens up on the waves crashing on the shore with a narrator monologuing his ass off. And he's like, this place is spooky. Ooh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So we get the... He said in the monologue that their dog wouldn't go in. So that's just proving this thing that happens throughout horror movies where pets... Or just animals in general, are scared of the supernatural stuff.
They know.
They know too much.
That's why I always like keep an eye on my cats when I'm watching a horror movie and I hear a noise. I'm like, did they freak out? No? Okay, we're probably safe. It's okay. Watching them.
That's a good, you know, that's a good way to go there.
We do find out that it's Roderick, who goes by Rick, by the way, but Roderick is the one narrating this.
Yes. I ended up just calling him Rod in my notes, but then I noticed he was called Rick throughout the movie, so...
Yeah.
We'll call him various names, but yes, Roderick is his real name. His God-given name.
Roderick.
The person narrating, Roderick Fitzgerald, who was played by Ray Milland.
There it is.
Yep, there he is. So Roderick and his sister, Pamela, who is played by Ruth Hussey, move into a house without knowing his history. Hold on, what the fuck?
Yeah, well...
Did I skip a bunch?
Yeah, hold on. So they... decided to take a 2-week vacation. She said, he says fortnight, but that's 2 weeks. So a 2-week vacation to this house. And while they're there, then they're like, oh, fuck, this house is cool. We should buy it. That's how they get there.
I'm sorry. I'm dumb. You can cut that out. So,
no, you're fine.
Yeah, no. What you said, Sid, was correct. From what I understood, just going into the, I thought they already owned the house because, like, the narration says we've been here for a while and all that stuff. But it shows them hiking up this, like, cliff, and they just come upon this house on the cliff. And it's a pretty spooky-looking house. It's a mansion.
Yeah. Which, well, you see them drive up later, so I don't know why they, like, climbed up the cliff. Like, that was a weird...
Where did they come from?
Wait, right? The ocean?
What kind of... Okay, also, my guy here and my gal are hiking in business cash. It's like, yeah. What are you doing?
Yes, they are.
Like, what is the tie for? Like, if you need to, like, tie a rope or, like, you know, descend or rappel down?
She's in dress and a heels.
The heels. I don't get that. Or as Mr. Krabs would say, the boots. Sorry.
As we were alluding to earlier, they say they're from London, but it's very much the 1940s transatlantic accent with a tiny bit of London thrown in every once in a while. So
I honestly did not hear any of the London accent. Like, I was just like, oh, they're just Americans, like, displaced into London or, you know, outside of London. Yeah. So yeah, it is set in 1937 as well. So anyway, our peeps are just hiking down a mountain and then, or hiking up a cliff rather, and then their dog chases a squirrel into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, like, very goofy music plays. It's like, dun, 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 dun. It's like cartoon music.
Yeah.
As they're, like, chasing the dog into the house. So they just B&E into this house. No problem.
I think they had keys, didn't they? Or no, the door was just unlocked.
Yeah.
It was the 40s.
It wanted them to come inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't lock your doors in. The squirrel goes under the stove, dog's yapping, blapping, and then Rod sticks his hand under the stove. It gets bit by the squirrel. The
squirrel, like, bites Rod.
You're an idiot.
Ow.
This guy's already, like, a doofy guy. Like, I just know. I thought it was funny.
Well, because he would be insufferable if he wasn't a little doofy.
Yes. Oh. It helps this movie a lot. If he was this, like, self-serious guy, we'll talk about some of the stuff he says later, but, like, it very much helps with this movie a lot that you're like, oh, this guy's kind of like a doofus.
Oh, the squirrel bit me.
It just made me laugh. Well, and then even better, because you kind of sounded like Hank Hill right there. Their dog's name is Bobby.
Yes, it is.
He's like, God damn it, Bobby. Chasing the squirrel. Like, it's so good.
God dang, squirrel bit me.
Just propane. Anyway, so Pamela is just like, oh my God, this house is, like, so fresh. I love it. And she's like, She is, like, in love with this thing as soon as she steps inside.
Yeah.
And this is where we kind of learn that they're vacationing from London, and they have, like, these dreary, they're, like, flats, their apartments. And so they want to, she's talking about wanting to move out to this place.
They don't
even know if it's for sale or anything. Yeah. Yeah.
I just love the part where she's trying to convince Rick, and he's like, well, we have jobs. And she's like, oh, Rick, well, you're a music producer and you're not very good at that anyway. So you could just come out here and start anew and do your own music. It's like, well, damn, Pam.
Okay, from now on, Sid, you're doing all the impressions, because that was, like, spot on. Oh. Yeah, that's exactly what happened there. So, yeah, Pamela wants them to pool their money together, which is kind of a weird thing for bro and sis to do, to buy a place.
I was going to ask you, like, I do not have siblings, so I'm like, is this a normal sibling thing to do, to buy a house together?
I'm not sure. It just feels odd for this time, for 1944. It seems, I don't know. I think we were talking before this too, where it sounds like it's a way to set up, obviously, the romances are going to happen later. But it is a very unique, at least in my mind, brother and sister moving in together into a house, buying a house together.
Mm-hmm. We don't really get a lot of backstory on them, so.
Not really, no. And they also, like you said, are not in, like, the best financial situation. So for them to do this is kind of like, I don't understand. And I'm not sure what she does exactly for money. But like you said, he is like a music critic and gets paid for that.
Yeah.
And so she's trying to convince him to move into the house by saying, like, oh, you could write your masterpiece.
Write your
concert.
Own music. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the next scene is they go to another house, and they are asking about whether the mansion's for sale. I'm not really sure if this is just, like, the nearest neighbor or how they determined where to go. But
I don't know. I was wondering that too. I also like when he's like, we don't even know if the house is for sale. And she's like, oh, Rick, life isn't that cruel. I'm like, bitch, it very much is that cruel.
Yeah. What? She is living in the wrong times. Like, baby, come live in the 2020s. Like,
baby girl.
You can't find a fucking house to save your life. Damn it.
No, you cannot.
Not for the money that they have anyway, which we'll get to. So they go to this other mansion, nearby mansion. Mm-hmm. And they knock on the door and they're going to ask about the mansion, the one that they want to buy. And they are greeted by Stella Meredith, who's played by Gail Russell.
Stella.
And she says her grandfather's out, but we'll be back soon. And he's the guy that they want to talk to, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a funny scene here. And this is a running theme that we have covered in our podcast is, so Roderick just strikes a match.
Mm.
And then he asks, is it okay? And he's like a millimeter away from lighting a cigarette. And he's like, is it okay if I smoke in here? And she's like, sure. Yeah, it's okay.
Go for it.
Yeah. She said something about her grandfather smoking at one point and then like had a distaste for it. So to me, that really says like, please don't smoke in my house. But
she's 18 and not going to say that.
It's also, yeah, it's the 40s too. So like, it's just assume that you're going to smoke inside.
True.
Her grandfather is Commander Beach, played by Donald Crisp.
Crisp.
Do you want to laugh at that name a little bit more? Or?
Yes, thank you. I'm done now.
Perfect. Perfect.
Just blew out my mic.
You got that one, Herbert? Okay, we're good to move on. So they disclose their interest in the house to Stella, and she gets a little cagey and says it's not for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And just as she's saying that, her grandfather walks in. He's like, hey, I want to sell the house, basically.
He's like, don't listen to her. She's a dumb girl. Come in here. I'll sell you the house.
He immediately is like, yeah, the house is for sale.
Mm-hmm.
So he pushes Stella, his granddaughter, out of the room and is like, the adults are going to talk, sweetie.
He does. He's like, this is private business. Get the fuck out.
He's a bit of a dick, yeah. So we find out that the house was Stella's mother's house,
mm-hmm.
hence why we're thinking she doesn't want to have it sold. She doesn't want anything. Yeah,
makes sense.
So they speak to Beach, both Pam and Rod do, about the house. They offer £1,200,
mm-hmm.
and Beach is immediately interested in this. And I had to look this up, but apparently that's like about £66,000 today. So it's... Yeah. Not a ton of money, but like back then, I assume it would be a lot of money.
Yeah. Well,
a bargain for a mansion.
If they're looking together to buy, I wonder if like it was an inheritance, like maybe they lost their parents and were like, look, let's pool our money together and figure this out.
Could be. Yeah. Beach kind of says that the money is going to his granddaughter, mm-hmm. Stella, because it was her mom's house and everything. He does mention that the previous tenants complained of anomalies at the house. And Roderick is like,
well, obviously the price should be lower than if there's some ghost stories.
Immediately, he's like, "What are you?"
Beach is like, "Ah, no. Well, I'm not. I'm firm on that."
What do you mean, ghosts? Well, I'll say the price should be lower then.
I just love in this movie, like mentioning ghosts was like mentioning witches in like the 1800s. Mm-hmm. They're like, "What? You can't say that." Like, it's like a don't say that word.
Don't do it
because everyone goes a little hysterical. The men go a little hysterical when they hear that word.
It's like
the women are like perfectly calm.
It's like saying Voldemort. You just can't say it.
What?
You can't say he who would not be named.
Voldemort. I did it.
No.
I did it twice.
You'll doom us all.
Are we getting sued by Voldemort now? Ooh, God damn it.
He's dead. Oh, ooh.
Oh.
Oh, God. Is that a spoiler?
He's dead? Oh. We get sued by Voldemort.
We should probably cut that.
I mean, he used to have a nose for these things.
Oh, my God. That was terrible. Move on.
Okay, I'm trying to find my place. They buy the house.
Yeah.
So next scene, they're moving in.
They buy the house.
So when they've done their B&E and they're walking through and like, oh, look at these rooms, you'd be cool with all my shit in it. They encounter this door that is locked and they're all wondering what's going on with this door. So the first thing they do when they buy the house is they go unlock that door. And it's basically just, Pamela immediately is like, I hate this room. Like, this is a dumpy room. And Rod's like, oh, I thought this is where I would do all my, like,
all my
piano
music, yeah.
Orchestrating or whatever.
Like, the room is fine. It's got a ton of windows. It's lots of natural light. I don't know why she's immediately, like, before a ghost, she's just like, this room fucking sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, this room has, like, so the mansion is pretty ornate. It has some pretty nice rooms. This room, I guess, it feels like an add-on later on. And it has, like, greenhouse windows where they're, like,
yeah.
you know, 45 down. Yeah. So maybe that's her trouble, is that the windows are weird or different from the other ones. But
I just think
for the most part, it looks nice.
I think it's funny. She went from like being an apartment owner to immediately being like, this room is fucking trash. We're not staying in this room. Okay.
Pamela has standards.
She does.
The Pam standards.
Pam.
So they both become kind of, while they're in this room, they kind of both become demoralized. And like, even Rod's like, maybe I can't write a masterpiece in this room. He's like all of a sudden like discouraged for some reason.
Yeah, they get like really, really sad. And the flowers that she brought in start like wilting.
Oh, yes. Good point. I kind of forgot to note that. So we're basically getting the hint, like something with this particular room is off.
Yeah.
They also just randomly see Stella standing outside of their house.
Stella!
And so she like looks up dramatically and then leaves. Yeah. And even though as Pam's like waving to her, she just leaves.
She just leaves.
There. Yep.
If this was like a later movie, she would have totally flipped her the bird and walked away.
Oh, sure. This was like Scream or something.
Yeah.
Fucking Billy Loomis up in that.
Okay. Asian.
All right.
I think you have the crush on Billy Loomis. You bring him up an awful lot.
What are you talking about, Sid?
Okay. All right.
I bring it up because I know it just, it's an easy way to get at you real quick. You know, like it's a nice.
Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. You need to find something I like and attack that.
And ruin it for you. Okay. Duly noted.
Yeah. Ace Ventura's biggest, you know, if you want to watch that movie, like that's a pretty big movie to me, but
isn't that the one where he
anyway, so
his butt and his hands?
Yeah, that's like one of the best parts.
Is it? How old are you?
Watch it again. Watch it again. I watched it last night.
Never
watch it again.
Seen it.
But you know, yet you know what his ass looks like.
Yeah, it's like a
been Googling?
No.
Oh.
No. No. The hell were we?
Hold on, I have it right here, because I have laugh out loud, what the fuck, and it
started.
Because Roderick just about slides down the banister, but he thinks twice about it, and he says,
my landing gear isn't what it used to be,
which is like, so all these movies where like kids want to slide down like railings and stuff, this has always been a thing, apparently.
Hilarious.
It's pretty good.
No, I laughed. I was thinking of the part a little bit earlier where they're still in the room. And Rick is like, oh, well, there's nothing to be freaked out. And Pam's like, I'm not. I'm good. And he's like, oh, okay, good. And then the dog starts barking. He's like, oh, shit, what was that?
Yes, frequently. And that's what I like about this movie is it kind of subverts your expectations with that. Because, again, I think movies around this time are all like,
yeah, see, this is what's going on here. This is the plot and everything. And, oh, this woman over here is going to get hysterical. Oh my gosh, she's going to go crazy.
Like, it's a lot of that bullshit, which is annoying. But basically, Rod is that hysterical person. So he's like, Pam, don't go crazy on me. And he's the one going crazy. And Pam is completely like stone faced. Like, I'm good.
Pam's like, no, I'm good, man.
It's good. I'm calm and collected here. Mm-hmm. So, next scene is we're in the town of wherever they're at. I think Cornwall is where they're at. Yeah. Or is that like, that's like a section. Okay, anyway. Stella's in town spying on Rod. He is going into a store. He's talking to a shopkeeper. And he's talking about the house that he just bought, which is called the Windward House. We should probably mention
yes,
that.
Yeah.
Because it is known in town. Everyone knows this house. Everyone knows some crap went down there. So the shopkeeper starts saying that the last tenant skipped out because they owed money or something like that. And they were talking about ghosts. So immediately Rod's like, oh, okay. I'm interested in that. He also said that the commander's daughter died at the house and fell off the cliff and kind of in tones like maybe it wasn't an accident type of thing.
Right. It's like an open secret. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, it was an accident. Wink, wink,
wink. Wink. Mm-hmm. So I'll say that for our listening audience.
It's true. I gave a big dramatic wink and no one could see it except Jack and Herbert. This is an audiovisual material.
Mm-hmm. So Stella confronts Roderick as he's coming out of the shop. Mm-hmm. He is immediately suspicious of what she wants because he thinks that she wants to talk him out of the house again.
Yes.
He basically, like, sweet talks his way into, like, oh, let's hang out for a little bit. And they're then walking arm in arm, which is kind of weird.
Well, she's also, like, immediately like, no, I just wanted to apologize for my behavior and I'm sorry. So that disarms him. And he really thinks ladies are dumb. Well, she kind of is dumb. So with her, it doesn't feel like an act. Because I thought for a while she was, like, playing a long game. But no, Not really.
And I think this also plays into, like, the way stuff was written back then of, like, everyone is so oblivious, and I don't know. Maybe I'm off base there, but she does kind of come off as, like, okay. And he takes advantage of that because he's, you know, she's basically, she seems interested in him. And that's what he is, picking up on.
Yeah.
So they kind of basically have this day together after this.
Well, we find out that she is 20, and I don't know how old he is, but it's not 20.
I don't think he says his age.
No, he and Pam don't say their age, but I assumed like late 30s, early 40s.
Yes. Much, much older than Stella. Yes. Because
Who doesn't seem dumb when you're mid 40s living with your sister?
Yeah.
20 year olds, what do they know?
What do they know? Fucking dummies.
And as a side note, before he leaves the shop, an old woman comes in. And to date this movie, that is Angela Lansbury's mom.
Oh my God. Wow.
Angela Lansbury, the woman who looked so vivacious in Murder, She Wrote. Yes, young and full of life. It's her mom. It's her mom in the shop.
Oh my God. Okay. Thank you, Herbert.
That's good to know. Thank you, Herbert.
Alongside finding out that I keep wanting to call her Chelsea. I don't know why.
Chelsea.
The hell is her name? Stella. I don't know why. We find out
it looks like a Chelsea.
Maybe that's it. We find out Stella is 20, and we find out she lived for 3 years in the Woodward house. Windward,
yes.
Windward. So yeah, like Jack said, Rick is immediately like, "Well, this young lady is pretty and kind of dumb. Say, what are you doing for the day?" And she tells him all these plans, one of which includes going to the library, Rick. And he's like, "Nah, that's stupid. Come sailing with me."
That's boring. Yeah, I was like, "Bastard!
How dare you?"
That's a good day. God damn it! Yeah, he basically, Rod is like telling her to stop fixating on the 3 years that she lived in that house, and the 3 years we, it was. He's trying to say stop focusing on the past, live your life today. Like you have your years ahead of you. You're beautiful, blah blah blah. Which it's like, oh, sounds like Rod's a little interested now.
Yeah.
No. So instead of running the errands for that day, Rod just takes her sailing.
Yes.
Which is like, oh, okay. And Rod, so they're on the sailboat, and Rod has a great line where he said he has a stomach like Gibraltar.
Yes.
And then he's like, I guess in reference to not getting seasick.
Yeah.
But then he says, not externally, of course. I guess, which means that he's not fat. Wait, I don't know. Are these jokes? I don't know.
These jokes.
These 1940s jokes I'm not getting.
I also like that he's like, "You're not seasick, are you?" And she's like, "No, I'm fine." And he's like, "Great, I've got a stomach like Gibraltar." And then a little later, he's like clearly about to yak because he is
2 seconds later. Yeah.
He's like, "Boy, we must have stayed at a different part of Gibraltar."
I don't know what his obsession with Gibraltar was. Holy crap. He is so sick that he's acting drunk. He's like, he's not making any sense. His eyes are going all crazy. Yeah, it's great.
That could have been a great tagline for this movie. The Uninvited. Are these jokes?
Thank you.
Are these jokes? I just love that anytime he like gets to be a little bit heroic and like, I'm going to do something cool, he immediately like says something dumb or does something stupid. And I appreciated that this movie was funny.
It was very disarming.
Yeah.
Which is always good in these kind of movies where, you know, you just assume in these kind of movies in this era, like, oh, everyone's perfect. They have these perfect lives. But he's just like, you know, trying to be confident, but is clearly a doofus.
He's kind of a dummy. But like,
doofy.
Charmingly so. Well, we also find out that.
Oh.
What?
You think so?
No, I wouldn't date him. We find out that Stella wears her mother's dead perfume. Her dead mother's perfume. Motherfucker.
Her mother's dead perfume. That fucking perfume's not made anymore. It's fucking out of style.
She wears her dead mother's perfume. Oh my God.
I mean,
we're on one.
The way she was talking, I don't know if the perfume is made anymore. So it might be both.
Yeah, thank you.
Her dead mother's dead perfume.
Yeah, dead in the water.
Ooh.
And then
they're in the water.
Yeah, they're on the boat, and like I think Rick is trying to stand up and show Stella something, but he immediately gets like whacked in the back of the head with the sail, and it's every fucking time, and it made me laugh.
And he's back down until they get back to the docks. He's just done.
He's like, forget it.
He's such an idiot. I tried to be someone today, but
I couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it. I stood up and got knocked on the head. I'm going to lay back down.
I have a stomach like Gibraltar. What's happening?
Oh, my God. Okay. So they get back to the docks, and Roderick then drops the, not the bomb, I guess, but he says he's going, which, bad timing for when this movie came out. Never mind. He basically tells her something that is a big thing. He says that he's going to London for 3 weeks, and Stella is, she wants to go hang out at Windward. So, yeah,
but he keeps reading it as like, she's sad I'm leaving. Nice.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But he's basically like, oh yeah, just go to the house, hang out with Pam. Like, I'll be back in 3 weeks. That kind of deal. So the next scene is he's back in 3 weeks. So 3 weeks have elapsed, and we are basically, he comes home. Rod does. He comes home with someone.
Yes.
Which we don't learn. I don't learn who this is until a little bit later. But and then he's greeted by Pamela, who she says that Bobby ran away. The dog ran away.
She does not seem concerned about it because Rick is like, oh, Bobby. And she's like, well, say, Rick, don't waste your time. Bobby ran off. And that's it. Oh, okay.
Now look here. Look here. Look here, girl. I'm Bobby. And
okay, you do it way better. Bobby ran off. I want to say something here.
Okay.
Because this comes up when he was talking about Stella. If you are mentioning, are you, if you are interested in someone romantically, do not call them kid. Do not call them kid.
Yeah.
This was the Bruce Campbell thing in Evil Dead 2. Come on, bro. Don't call him kid. That's really weird.
I don't like that. But I also think it was more common in the 40s. Say,
listen here, kid. See? Say, yeah. Kid. Hey, doll. Hey, baby.
Yeah, I was looking at you, kid.
Yeah.
I feel like Herbert is very acquainted with this type of language.
But even at least then, when he was saying, here's looking at you, kid, it was more of a goodbye. Don't think about me, because I'm probably going to die in the next couple weeks.
Hooray! There's a war going on. There's a war going on.
I've been to too many gin joints, and you show up to one of them. What are the odds?
What are the odds of all the gin joints in the world?
Which I've been to all of them.
Chose this
one. Just happened to show up to one of them. How dare you?
How?
It's my gin joint.
Dare you? I own all of the gin.
Don't worry about me. I know the piano man by name.
His name is Sam.
Now play it again.
Just can't let me have the last word. But the person they bring is their housekeeper, Lizzie Flynn, who is played by Barbara Everest. So.
Sid, did you research this episode?
Girl, I got you. Yes, I always do. I always write at least like 15 pages.
A notebook worth?
Yes.
That is a lot.
I need it.
So what you're saying, at some point, maybe I mentioned this in the past, we should just basically reshoot the movies based on your notes. Because there's so much.
We could try.
We got all the dialogue.
Probably could.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
And the first one I want to do is Tucker and Dale, because I know you took a lot of notes.
Oh, I have to leave forever. Goodbye. No.
Okay.
Wait, don't go. Don't be like Bobby. Damn it, Bobby.
Damn it, Bobby.
Damn it, Bobby.
Going up the chimney.
So, yes. No, I agree with your Lizzie introduction, and yeah. I second it.
Lizzie brought her cat Whiskey, which is the most important.
His name was Whiskey?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't catch that. That's
and
good.
And I love him.
And you don't want to know what that cat does, what Whiskey does.
Whiskey does not go
refuses
up the stairs.
To go up the
That's right.
Refuses to go up the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we get the second reinforcement that the pets know what is going on, right. And the humans don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're basically, it's like, I think it's like bedtime at this point. So they all have like lighted candles and they're walking up the stairs together. And like this draft almost blows all the candles. And everyone's like, oh, drafty stairs you have here, basically.
Weird.
So now we wake up in the middle of the night with Roderick,
mm-hmm.
and he hears sobbing. So he lights his candle and slowly walks out of his bedroom and kind of stands at the top of the stairs. And then Pam comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, she's been there for 3 weeks and has experienced this before.
Yeah.
So she comes up and is like, oh, yeah.
She's like, oh, she's crying again.
The moaning woman. Yep. Happens at dawn every time.
Mm-hmm.
Happens for a little bit. Don't you worry about looking for her. I've already checked. She's not there. And we're like, Jesus, Pam.
So what does Rick immediately go? Well, I better go downstairs and check. She could be somewhere else. It's like, I already looked. Well, yes, but you're a dumb woman.
I just told, yeah, it... That's the problem I have with all of his, like, even though he's doofy and it's funny, yeah, it's all implied like these women are crazy and I have to see for myself because I can't believe a word they would say. That's what bothers me about the dialogue in these kind of movies.
Yeah, but they're all clearly smarter than he is.
Absolutely. And that's what I love about his acting is that he clearly is not in control of his situation. He says he is, but he's not. Mm-hmm. And that's what's great about this. So, yeah, they basically find out that this thing is not it's not Lizzie. Because that's what my mind was going to. I thought maybe the cat got killed or something, mm-hmm, and she was crying over the cat or something. But no, it's not Lizzie. She's in her room. And as I said, Pam tells us that this has been happening for 3 weeks, mm-hmm, and I thought I was going crazy. Now I'm a little happier that my brother is hearing the same thing that I was. And this is the part where Rod keeps telling her to be calm. He says, Pam, be calm, be calm, be calm. And she's like, I am.
I am.
And Rod is freaking out. He's like, his eyes are darting back and forth. It is so good.
Well, I also love, like, when they go back to bed, because Pam says the ghost goes away when the dawn light comes in. And so it turns dawn, and she's like, oh, let's just go back to bed. The ghost isn't coming back. So he goes into his room and, like, pulls the covers up, and then the door immediately slams. He's like, ah! It's wonderful.
And just, yeah, it's great. It reminds me of Poltergeist. So, like, Pam is operating as the family of Poltergeist, where they're just like, oh, this is cool. This shit's happening, mm-hmm, to us. Like, this is like an awesome thing. Not that she's like thrilled about it, but she, like clockwork, knows when this stuff is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Rod is like, holy shit. And he's like, you know, he's waking up to a brown bed or whatever.
Yeah, it's gross.
Just waiting for it. I gotta slide one in there.
Do you need to slide in a poop joke? I don't think you do. That's disgusting. Ever.
Slide out a poop
joke. Gross! So the next day, Rick goes to Commander Beach's house.
Get answers. You read my notes. Yeah. You read my notes, it's right there.
Yes.
So yeah, he's Rod's at Beach's house saying, like, what the fuck happened to that house? I want to know what happened. Tell me everything you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Stella comes in, and she wants to see Rod, because she hasn't seen him for a while. And Grandpa is like, go to church.
Yeah.
Like, immediately.
Get the fuck out.
So she leaves the room, and Rod asks, she didn't, I'm sorry. Rod asks her how she's been recovering, because when he was gone for the 3 weeks,
mm-hmm,
he came back, and Pam said that Stella was too sick to come visit the house
She invited her for tea, and then was...
Yeah.
Told she's too sick to come.
Right. Which this confuses Stella because she was not sick. And we basically find out that Grandpa was the one. He literally says she's not strong enough to make new friends.
Yeah.
What the fuck, bro?
Well, the internet didn't exist yet, so. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to find your creepy mansion some other way.
That's right. Get it some other way. We do find out that Commander Beach inherited the house from his grandmother, so it's been in the family for a long time.
Right. I just wrote, Grandpa is a terse turkey.
He is a terse turkey. There. Nice alliteration.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
It's a little grumpy.
And pumpy. He, of course...
Well, you like that? Grumpy, yes. Pumpy.
Gramps won't tell Rod what's going on. He's like, I'm not spilling the beans on this shit. So, Rod, the next scene, Rod picks up. So, Stella's just walking down the road and hitchhikes. She, like, throws the thumb up, and Rod picks, mm-hmm, her up while she's walking down the road.
To church.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Because church is downhill. We all know that. I don't know.
Wow. Is that a hell joke?
Well, do you descend to go to heaven? Sorry.
You've made a poop joke and a hell joke. We're in rare form.
We can end this episode now.
No, we cannot.
Fade to brown.
Okay. Stella gets in Rick's fucking car.
Yes. And as they're talking, Rod invites Stella to dinner at Windward, and she accepts.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives her a ride to church, which is just up the hill, apparently.
Yes.
Well, it was down the hill first, and then it's up the hill again. I don't know. I'm so confused.
Jaggery.
Directions. They're hard.
All right.
So she meets Grandpa at church.
Yes.
After church, Grandpa again tries to keep Stella from going to the Windward because she tells him about her plans and meeting with Rod.
Mm-hmm.
And he is absolutely against that. She leaves the room, and then Gramps has his, like, clandestine phone calls.
She's essentially like, I'm 20. You can't tell me what to do anymore. And he's like,
right,
you live under my house. And she's like, don't even think about locking my door because there's no lock on it. And then, like, stomps upstairs as if she's won. But Grandpa's nuts, so.
Gramps has a secret weapon up his...
geriatric sleeve.
Cane arm. Mm-hmm. And he calls a family friend, Miss Holloway, who's played by Cornelia Otis Skinner.
She's bonker balls.
She's crazy. And he wants to meet up with her to discuss Stella. Mm-hmm. So, next scene. Mm-hmm. Stella is at the Windward. So, Grandpa lost. 1-0,
take
Stella.
That, Grandpa!
Yeah. And she's getting a tour from Rod. Rod shows Stella his piano room, and his piece that he wrote for Stella that was inspired by Stella.
So cute.
Okay. At one point, Stella stump. Jesus.
You're doing great.
Stella jumps up and runs out saying she died so cruelly. And we're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, it's the same kind of thing you were talking about earlier when Pam and Rick were in the room and they suddenly got sad. Stella went through that same thing. And she, like, went from being really charmed that, like, Rick wrote her this song called, like, Stella in the Starlight or something drippy like that.
Pretty good name.
Which is pretty cute. And then she...
I dropped my pants for that.
Cute. So then she gets sad and runs out of the room. Jack's just over here. He's going to have to pull his pants up to run after the room after her. Stella, wait.
I meant if the song was made for me, oh, you're not, my pants would drop. No, if I'm running away.
You're not dropping your pants for Rick. You're not like, hey, smooth daddy wrote me a song.
Hey, Sid, I learned this from you. Moving on. We are... No, yeah. So she says something about she died so cruelly. She runs out of the house. And also, I wanted to say, his piano part is, like, influenced by the room, too, because it's all nice and happy, and then it gets sad. And that's when she kind of, like, turns, her demeanor turns as well.
That's a good point.
But anyway, she says it's cruel. She starts running out of the house, and she's, like, heading toward the cliffs.
Yes.
She's going to jump off where her mother killed herself or died or whatever. And Rod happens to stop her.
Stop.
She seemed to be in a trance because she doesn't remember any of it.
Yeah. She's like very confused why she's on the cliffs.
Yeah.
What happened?
But of course, then they immediately hear screams from the house. And we go in and hear that she's standing on the staircase and said she saw a woman standing near the studio door. Mm-hmm. And the studio is that like haunted room that they keep getting weird feelings in.
Yeah.
So they kind of console Lizzie and like take her into the kitchen or whatever. And Stella just starts going up the stairs to that room because she's intrigued by this. Mm-hmm. And Rod goes looking for her and he finds that she is laying on the floor in the studio.
Well, she's fainted.
Something's happened. It's fainting. Yes. Fainting is such a like 40s through the 60s thing, you know. Mm-hmm.
It's a delicate.
Is that just me?
It's a delicate lady way to show distress.
Delicate flower. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's something you can do. Well, in the movies, it's something you can do very prettily. I'm sure it's not that pretty in real life.
You probably just fall down and bruise your head and like cartoon hematoma, just like doink. It's like 5 feet out from your face.
In the movie, it's very pretty.
But a person in modern days that has watched modern day horror movies, you just kind of assume, oh, they're fucking dead. Like, that's where my mind went immediately.
She went Stella. Goodbye. No, she just fainted.
She fainted. Oh, so they take the doctor. I got confused on this. Did they take her to the doctor or the doctor come to them?
They called the doctor. I think doctors, especially in rural areas, do a lot more house calls.
So Dr. Scott does a house call. Dr. Scott is played by Alan Napier.
Yes.
Tall.
He's tall.
Tall man. He's very tall.
Was he tall, Jack? Or what do you...
He was average.
It's okay.
So yeah, they take him to the doctor comes in and he is... Stella wakes up and she said that the room is very cold from what she remembers of all this going on. They also find that Bobby the dog was found and taken in by Dr. Scott.
Yeah.
Because he's talking to the family about it. And he's like, oh, yeah, the dog was fine. It was just kind of shaken up. But
I did like that about this movie, that there's no actual, like, animal death or nobody, none of the animals get hurt. And I appreciate that.
That is nice. Yes. Based on what we have seen recently. Mm-hmm. Seagulls rest in peace. Dogs rest in peace.
That's right.
Cats rest in peace. Oh, man.
Well, Jonesy was fine. Oh, you haven't heard that yet. Spoilers! Oh, no, wait. Never mind. I'm an idiot.
No, it's okay. They have both haven't heard it and have heard it at the same time. It's great.
True. Well, Dr. Scott.
This is the first time I'm hearing.
That's right. Dr. Scott essentially tells Stella to eat some soup and get some sleep.
Right.
And says, like, she needs to stay here tonight in the house. I don't really want to move her after a shock like that. And Rick and Pam essentially are, like, pumping him for information about the house and the people that live there. And he's like, well, I don't know. I'm still pretty new. I only lived here 12 years. Ha, ha, ha. And then...
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Scott.
But I think they're joking about how if you haven't lived there for generations, you're still a newbie.
Oh.
That's what's
a little old money joke?
Yeah, old money.
Okay. Okay.
That was...
I'll go for that.
Yeah.
Scott also... Dr. Scott also talks... He tells him everything he knows about the house. Mm-hmm. Like you said, they're pumping him for information. But he does mention Carmel, who is a Spanish model that... Stella's father used to draw?
Yeah, Stella's father was an artist, so he would draw Stella's mom, but he also had this model who came in and he drew her, and it was kind of like a, they call her a Spanish gypsy, which I don't like, so it's not a great
thing. Certainly say that word with some trepid. They're like, you know, like it's not a, it's like a, not a good word to be thrown around,
it,
I think.
Yeah, but. Well, I mean, it's kind of a slur.
Yeah, well, I mean, they definitely use it in that way in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, especially some of the later characters we meet who are unpleasant use it quite a bit.
Yeah, so I just don't think we should.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, well, it was very like clear that Carmel and Stella's dad were having a pretty open secret affair.
Right, and apparently Mary knew about all this, too.
Mary is the mom.
Right, yes, I'm sorry. Do we ever get the father's name?
No, they just call him
always just Mr.
Yeah, they keep calling him Meredith, but Meredith is the last name, so it's just Mr. Meredith.
I know. How much better would it be if it was Meredith?
That'd be amazing.
We'll call him Meredith.
Meredith.
No, God, that's so confusing because Mary. Never mind.
Anyways,
yeah. So we don't get his name. We just call him Mr. Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
They're still at the when where, like I was saying, I was kind of confused at where they went, but they're still there. They tell Dr. Scott about the wailing that happens at dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decide to stay up and play cards until 5:30 in the morning, and they don't hear the wailing. So,
right. Well,
problem solved?
Problem solved. We also learn that Mary, who was Stella's mom, who died on the cliff, we knew, but that we find out that Carmel died at the house, too. So both women have died at this house.
Right. Pam wakes up while they're playing their card game and says she smells perfume.
Yes.
And then checks on Stella. Or Rod checks on Stella, and she's gone. Well, she's not gone. She's just not in bed. So Stella is there. She's just looking out the window near the curtain. And she tells him that she felt the presence of her mother. And it was a positive thing.
Yeah.
A positive scenario. It wasn't a bad thing. So because of this, she wants to stay at Woodward. Mm-hmm. But the doctor ends up taking her home because he's like, no, you can't.
You can't stay here.
No. Like, too many bad things have happened to her when she's there. And at this point, Pam thinks the ghost is gone because, like, oh, Mary met her daughter, Stella, and now she can move on.
Yeah, she's at peace.
Yeah. But they check the room, and it's immediately, they're like, this room is still weird. It's still weird.
And then the ghost starts wailing, and they're like, damn it.
Do the wailing again. Exactly. So, now, next scene, we see that Rod goes to see Stella in the morning.
Wait.
Please?
You forgot the part where Pam tells Mary to shut up. She's like, you've already met Stella. What do you want? Go away. Because Pam ain't scared of nobody.
She is the like solid mind in this relationship with her and Rod. Rod is the one that's like panicking and stuff.
Yes.
So Rod goes to see Stella in the morning. She thinks he is going to take her back to Windward. Yeah. But Rod is kind of like taking on her grandfather's position of like, no, you're never going there.
Mm-hmm.
And she, what does he say? Rod says, see, babe, we'll just move to London in a small flat and we'll tear down the Windward. And she's like, what the fuck? Like, she does not want that. That's exact opposite of what she wants.
Yeah. Oh, Rod, you dummy.
And then she says that she hates Rod because he won't bring her to Windward. And then Rod just kisses her.
Yeah.
Romantic.
That's not great. She's like, I hate you for that. I just love that he's like, well, it's me you want to be with, right? We can run away to London together. She's like, no, dumbass. I want to be at the house where my dead mom is.
Finally, he's getting a little dose of reality here because it's not really, she might be somewhat interested in him, I guess, but it's not why she wants to go back to the house, because of the house and her mother and the connection between
exactly
them, but not interested in Ron. So I don't know if this is like the next scene or if it's like in a different part of the building here, but now we see that Pam and Dr. Scott are talking about Bobby, and they're like, oh yeah, Bobby likes this kind of food, blah blah blah, and Dr. Scott's like, you know, I wish I would have met you earlier anyway.
Slick little line. I just love how he's like, you know, I really didn't want to meet Bobby's owner, and now I'm sorry I waited so long. And it takes Pam a minute, and she's like, oh, because he likes hanging out with me. I don't know. It was very cute.
Yeah.
That's how you flirt appropriately.
Oh.
Not by kissing young 20-somethings after you just said you're going to burn their mom's house down.
And they called you stupid, and they don't want to have anything to do with you.
Yeah. So be a Dr. Scott. Don't be a Roderick.
I will be a skyscraper drink of water if I can. I will.
He is tall.
So.
Well, Rick finds them. He bursts in and demands help for Stella and says, Stella needs help, and Pam suggests they do a seance.
He cockblocks Scott, and yes, and they say, let's do
yes,
a seance.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So Rod is like, seance? What the hell is this shit? Like, he is absolutely against, like,
yes,
any of this doesn't make any sense. He just tells her to move on, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So next scene. Stella, Rod, Pam. Yes.
Well, I was gonna say Rick is against it at first, and then he's like, oh wait, we can use this to pretend the spirit of her mother is talking to her, and we can pretend that the spirit says, like, I'm okay, you can leave now, and hopefully that will cure Stella.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You should lead these every time.
No,
you're so much better at it.
No.
Yeah, so he basically wants to trick Stella and say, oh, your mom said don't go there. You know, like he mm-hmm. wants to influence the seance vote or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So the next scene is they're at Windward, and it's Stella, Rod, Pam, and Dr. Scott.
Mm-hmm.
They're at the seance, which this was interesting to me because apparently this was the 1940s version of Ouija board.
Yeah.
It's that you have an upside down wine glass and you have the alphabet in a circle, or, you know, in a big circle, and then you have a yes or no, just for convenience sake, I guess. Because why would you want to spell yes or no? That's a pain in the ass.
I thought that was cool. I knew seance parties, especially in, like, I think it was like 1920s or maybe a little earlier, like London, that was a big thing. So it's cool. I didn't know like how they did that before Ouija boards.
Absolutely. It was cool seeing that. Mm-hmm. And so they're basically, you know, they're letting Stella lead it. They're like, my mother here? Yes. You know, she's asking questions for her mom.
Yeah. Well, because so they all have to put like
a
finger on the wine glass. They'll ask a question, and then each person, kind of like you would with like the planchette for a Ouija board, each person like helps move the glass. But supposedly it's the spirit moving the glass.
But in this case, for the first couple questions, it is absolutely Dr. Scott and Rod moving the wine glass.
Yes.
Because she finds that out. She finds out that Stella can tell that him and Dr. Scott are like influencing the movement of the wine glass and says, stop. So then it's just her and Pam.
Mm-hmm.
So she asks, do you want to see me or something like that? And it goes to no. And so Stella's kind of like surprised by that. And she says, well, you know, why? What's going on here? And she said, Mary spells out, the ghost spells out, I guard, basically. Which they're thinking at the time is that Mary is guarding Stella against Carmel, the other spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But then the wine glass just like up and like smashes. It just like throws itself against the wall and just blows up into a million pieces.
Yes. Yeah. The spirit like throws it away.
And now Stella's in a trance and she's speaking Spanish. And it gets even colder in this room and the candles go out.
I don't know. Maybe that's a spot. The fact that it takes them so long, like, I don't know. I'm not good at mysteries, and I figured this one out, and I was just frustrated.
The fact that
it took them so long to figure it out.
Stella was not the daughter of Mary.
Dun dun dun! Spoilers.
Whoopsie!
Yes.
It looking back on it, it does seem very obvious. But again, maybe this was like a super twist back then and hadn't been done. True. I have no idea.
Probably.
But so yeah, during Stella, the seance.
She's in a trance speaking Spanish.
Yes. And during this, someone's at the front door and like ringing the doorbell and pounding on the door and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they'd be ringing the doorbell if they had candles. So maybe he was pounding on the door. I'm sorry. Is that right?
I think so.
they like turn to leave to go answer the door. And there's like a spooky mist by the bedroom door, which I don't know how they did this back then. So I'll just say that, yeah, this was pretty cool that they showed something. You know, they're not just alluding to things throughout the entire movie. They actually show something.
Yeah, they got some ghostly effects.
Yeah. Grandpa Beach just like busts in the fucking back door and is like, what the fuck's going on here? What in tarnation? And he's like demanding answers from everyone and no one's saying anything to him. Mm-hmm. So eventually him and Rod talk and Rod's like, you've been withholding information. And he's like, well, so what? And they just go on this back and forth mm-hmm. and like they can't trust each other. And then Grandpa Beach just demands Dr. Scott takes him and Stella home. Yeah. She's like, bitch.
Like, how did you get that? He must have walked. I don't think Grandpa drives himself anywhere.
I think Grandpa's just used to that fucking servant lifestyle.
Drive us home.
Can't drive himself anywhere. Okay, so next scene, we're back. Stella's back in bed mm-hmm. at her grandfather's residence. Mm-hmm. Beach is being very dismissive and condescending to Dr. Scott. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Scott's just like, hey, I'll be here if you need me. And, you know, and just leaves. And now we get to see Miss Holloway show up.
Yes.
And it was the person that Beach was on the phone with earlier, trying to figure out what was going on with Stella. Mm-hmm. So she's now here. And it sounds like this is like a weird deal where, like, it sounds like Mary wanted Stella to grow up with Miss Holloway. That's kind of the exposition we're getting here. Mm-hmm. But Grandpa was like, no, Stella needed to be with him. And that quote, he taught her to be like Mary in every way,
yeah.
Even though she's not as beautiful. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, this is the...
Which, I took that, especially once we find out whose kid she really is, I took that as him being like, no, I trained her to be Mary, even though she's not Mary's daughter.
It's just weird. I guess that makes more sense in the light of we know that it's not Mary's daughter. Mm-hmm. But when I thought it was that, I was like, oh, you're some weird, like I'm going to raise this granddaughter to be my daughter, like, and take her place type of thing.
Right.
Maybe. I don't, like, it was weird. Like, Grandpa was giving off some weird vibes during this.
Yeah. Well, Miss Holloway is weird, too. And she comes in and, like, greets Stella, and she's kind of weird. And Stella knows who she is. Yes. So she's not afraid of her. She's like, oh, hello. And then she kind of falls asleep. And then, like Jack was saying, Miss Holloway's like, you should have given her to me a long time ago, and then we'll move her to my facility while she's asleep so she wakes up at my place so we can start the training, essentially, or the deprogramming or whatever.
Let's not forget, good word, deprogramming, because I feel like that's what's going to happen here. Mm. Let's not forget that they also talk about how hot Mary was, because there's like this giant painting of Mary in this room, and they're like, look at her, she's beautiful.
What a babe.
This is Grandpa and her friend that are like saying all this shit.
I feel like her friend wanted to be more than mm-hmm. friends. I'm just, you know,
I
you
think
know what
so.
I'm saying, you know what I'm saying?
You know what I'm saying? I think I do understand. I think
Miss Holloway had eyeballs for Mary.
Yeah, especially when we learn like in what capacity she knew the family too. Mm-hmm. She was the nurse of the family. So we'll kind of go into that in a little bit.
Trained nurse, baby.
So to your point, I said, so they're dumb bullshit. Put Stella to sleep because she's awake before. And then they're talking about how hot Mary is. And Stella's like, fuck this. And so they plan to take her to Holloway's place. Mm-hmm. Next scene, though, Lizzie is cleaning up after last night, which is the glass on the floor from Gramps breaking
the door down.
Yeah. And she just goes, what the fuck is this? And she like is pointing at the seance stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And Ron's like, what, honey? What? What, doll? We aren't going to do anything tonight. Like he's trying to be reassuring. Yeah. And she's like, ugh. Man. So this is where we get kind of the exposition dump I was just talking about, where Lizzie says that there was a nurse at the time Mary died mm-hmm. and that she may have some answers. And she says, it's Miss Holloway. Miss Holloway's the nurse. And Rod and Pam want to go to talk to her immediately, which is funny because they are basically, if we go back to Psycho, mm-hmm. where you have the inspector and he's doing all of his investigating, and he's finding out his own clues on his own.
Yeah.
But then we have the main protagonist doing their own investigating on their own mm-hmm. as well. We kind of have the same situation here. It's kind of an interesting, I wouldn't call it a callback because this movie came before that, but I just mean the way they have it set up where someone that's like trained to be an investigator and then like two people that are just like, ah, we'll just try to figure out what's going on here.
It's very like amateur detective style, kind of like Agatha Christie's stuff.
Yes. Right. Thank you. You can cut all that and just put in what Sid said because yeah. that was much more succinct. Yep. So Lizzie is pissed about the seance. She talks about the nurse, which is Miss Holloway. So Rod and Pam set up a meeting to go talk to her, and they are let into the building is called the Mary Meredith Retreat, and they go into the waiting room. They also meet one of the residents while they're waiting to to see Miss Holloway, and she's acting really freaking weird, and her name is Miss Bird, played by Dorothy Stickney, and she has this weird interaction where she gives this basket of eggs to Rod.
They're a basket.
They turn out to be stones. She gives them to Rod and says, would you deliver these to Mrs. Holloway? Because, you know, I don't have a meeting with her today, and I think you should do this. And Roger's like, sure, honey. Sure, toots. I'll do that for you. It's really weird.
I thought she was going to be a bigger part because she's listed on the IMDb page. And I'm like, oh, surely she comes back. Nope, just that weird little, like, bloop. That was it.
Just that interaction. I think what we're led to believe there is that Miss Holloway is kind of looking over people that maybe have some mental disabilities.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It kind of is setting up the vibe that Miss Holloway is kind of like a dictator of this place. Because she's like, oh, we can speak to her when she asks. You know, like, it's, we can only have meetings with her if we set them up. This kind of stuff. So it sounded like, oh, maybe this is kind of oppressive.
Definitely has a God complex.
Miss Holloway.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Not Miss Bird. Miss Bird just wants to get little Bird. Stones in her basket.
Yeah, she has some different concerns there. So they meet. They're taking it in to meet Miss Holloway, and she starts talking about Mary like she's the best goddamn thing to ever fucking happen to this planet Earth.
She is in love. And then she talks about Mary.
She's in love with Mary, and she then talks about Carmel, who says she's the evilest thing on this Earth. Huh.
Yeah, Miss Holloway deals in black and whites. There's not a lot of introspect in there. It's either she's amazing, like Helen, or fuck her.
Yeah, like the ones and zeros. Exactly, exactly.
Oh my God, Jack. God. Where were we?
Mrs. Holloway's got another massive portrait of Mary sitting up there.
Yes.
Yeah,
and it's different, too.
Thank you.
It is. It's a different one. They've got some many different Mary portraits.
We got a different angle of Mary there.
Commissioned a different one.
Yeah, so we're in.
And Mrs. Holloway probably has one over her bed, probably, too.
I would not doubt it.
And you mean, like, on the ceiling.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. When you're laying down, you
look
can
up
see
at her.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Good night, Mary. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Where am I at?
Hold
on.
She was saying that Meredith, like Mr. Meredith, should have been the one to end the affair because they were asking, like, well, if people knew that Meredith and Carmel were having an affair, like, why didn't Mary say anything about it?
Yeah, I like how they put it on the victim. It's like, why didn't you stop this affair? It's like, bitch, it's her fucking husband that was doing it, not her. Ugh, fuck these people. So apparently Mary and husband took Carmel to Paris.
Yes.
To give her a job. This is kind of like a, like, hey, we're going to give you a life. Stay away from us because you are my husband's, you know,
mistress,
and you need to be away from us and not come back. So they take her to Paris, give her a job, give her money, etc. And then they come back from Paris with a baby.
Sure do.
Which is pretty interesting, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
But also what comes back besides the baby is Carmel.
What?
Yeah. What the fuck?
Girl, that was not a deal.
That was not the deal. That was not the deal.
Yeah.
Or ideal. So apparently Carmel, at one point, when Carmel came back and kind of confronted them at their house, which is Windward.
Windward.
Okay. Windward. Carmel comes back to the house and she steals the baby and races to the cliff.
To throw it over the cliff.
Presuming she's going to throw it over the cliff. Thank you. And Mary pursues her, and then Carmel struck down, quote, Carmel.
Mary is struck down by Carmel.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. And this is all witnessed by Miss Holloway, apparently.
Miss Holloway.
Although I think Miss Holloway has a little bit of a bias in all of this. So
no way.
Yeah. So Rod tells Holloway how Stella almost threw herself off the cliff when they were at Windward, and Holloway seems surprised by this. And they then ask her what happened to Carmel, and she said, well, Carmel ran off. She came back with pneumonia, and then she
died a week, like, later.
Died later on. And that's basically, she's like, that's all I have for you. And so Rod and Pam leave, and as they're driving away in the next...
Wait, I have something. Before they leave, I have a thing, a final thing. You're pausing and staring at me.
A final
thing.
Fam thing?
No! Yes. So Rick asked Miss Holloway, who was the one that told Carmel that she had to leave? And Miss Holloway starts to say Mary and changes it to Meredith. I don't know if you caught that.
I did, but I was too dumb to write it down. So thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
No, that is important because we see Miss Holloway is unreliable as a narrator of all this information.
Yes, she is.
And as we see this too, and luckily our protagonists are not hoodwinked by this, because as they're driving away, they're talking about how, or at least Rod is, how suspicious of Miss Holloway he is.
Yeah.
And he kind of thinks that she has something to do with, she's hiding something, mm-hmm. essentially. Then we smash cut back to Miss Holloway.
Mm-hmm.
Stella's in a room and Miss Holloway opens the door. So now we understand that Stella is basically trapped in Miss Holloway's little mental institution prison thing that she has going on.
Yeah, they've locked her in.
Right. Then we go back to Pam and Rod. They're just
debriefing about how weird she is. And then they go to Dr. Scott's.
Yeah, and even Rod's like, I could do without the Mary stuff. He's like fed up with how much they're like idolizing her. It's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they go back to Dr. Scott's office and there was like this weird line. I don't know if it's like a commentary on the day or something, but he is talking to another patient and he says, when that baby laughs, he's not delirious. Like intonating like, hey, parent, don't bring your kid in if he's just laughing because he's not crazy. That's just normal.
It's not the omen up in here. It's not the Antichrist.
I thought it was a funny little, you know, 1944 commentary.
Yeah, the baby's from the...
Doctor, please help me. My baby is happy.
He won't stop laughing.
He's from the south of Rome.
Doesn't he know this is the 40s? Doesn't this baby know there's a war going on?
He's from the south of Rome.
Yes. Yes. You gotta be careful with adopting those kind of babies.
That's right.
The south of Rome babies.
Damien.
Anyway, so yeah, they visit Dr. Scott. He happens to know about Holloway because
mm-hmm.
Rod and Pam kind of tell him about their visit with him, or with her rather. And he says that he has a former colleague called Dr. Rudd that knows her and did not speak well of her. So they're immediately trying to find that Dr. Rudd and interview him and ask him what he knows.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Scott is all of a sudden like, wait a second, fuck HIPAA. Or it didn't exist at this point either. And he goes and shows them medical records.
Sure did.
Of Dr. Rudd during the time when Mary Meredith and Carmel, you know, they're all around and like mm-hmm. they're doing the house calls and stuff. And so he says, he reads this, Carmel Quesada had pneumonia and it looks like the Merediths didn't take care of it. Because mm-hmm. apparently Carmela came back to the Meredith house and that's where she got treated for the pneumonia. But it looks like that the room was left open, like a window was left open and the room was really cold. So it was,
yeah,
it was almost intentional.
Snow is coming into the room. Like she is very, very ill. They charged her with criminal negligence.
Right. Yeah. So we learned that Miss Holloway essentially murdered Carmel through criminal negligence by doing that.
Mm-hmm. On purpose?
Mm-hmm. On purpose.
Okay. No.
Someone had to do it.
Did they?
Someone had to.
It did sound cooler on your mic, I will say.
It sounds a lot better with that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
With your vintage recording equipment, I assume, right?
It's the best equipment money can buy.
In the 1940s.
Yeah.
Right?
Wait, okay. What year is it?
Where am I?
Let's keep going.
Keep going.
So Dr. Scott, he's interrupted during all this reading of the medical records, and his staff say that, oh, Grandpa Beach, he's in trouble. You need to go help him. And he's
Grandpa
like,
Beach is ill.
So he goes and attends to Grandpa Beach. It's a great song, by the way. I can't wait till we hear the full version of that one.
Yeah, I bet.
Grandpa Beach is ill.
The spirit just moved me.
Which spirit? Animals or?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, so now we're back with Pam and Rod and Lizzie, mm-hmm. and she's terrified again. She's freaking out and said, I'm not going to stay in this fucking house. You guys are doing seances. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're up to. Mm-hmm. And Rod's just like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Toots. And she's like, okay.
Okay. Never mind. I'm fine now.
As Pam and Rod are talking, we like pan over to this book, this spooky book, and it's open and the pages are flipping. And it's very spooky. And then they smell the mimosa perfume again.
And they're like, brunch?
You craving some alcohol?
You craving booze?
Do you smell what I smell?
Can you smell what the rock is cooking?
Can you smell that smell?
It better be fucking breakfast.
Smells like mimosas.
I want dinner.
Bottomless mimosas.
Hold on.
I want that too.
Stop the podcast.
What?
Stop the podcast.
What?
Are you a breakfast person at all, Sid?
No, I don't like breakfast. Yeah, think about that. I will usually have a coffee and a yogurt.
One of that's breakfast related. Yogurt's just like healthy bullshit. Get that out of here.
Fuck all the way off, Jackathy.
I'm still hanging on by a thread. Hold on for a second. You don't like eggs or bacon or toast or French toast or pancakes or waffles or syrup?
Okay, here we go. I like eggs. I like eggs prepared like over easy, over medium. Okay. Scrambled is fine.
Yeah.
I like pancakes. I don't like pancakes all the way cooked. I like them.
What?
I like them gooey. Honestly, if I could just have the batter without it being cooked, that'd be the best.
No!
You asked!
Herbert, please. I don't know what kind of food you ate in your era, but like, goddamn, please tell me there's some fucking bacon and eggs in there. And pancakes.
Oh, of course. We had pancakes, scrambled eggs, and we even put a little coffee in the pancakes. Because, you know, you need a little extra oomph in the morning.
Oomph.
That's how they kept going in the mornings back then. That sounds so good.
I think the powdered sugar was powdered cocaine, but all right.
Well,
it's all powder to us.
That's not true. What is a
pancake but a very flat landing that you can roll your powdered sugar up on? Never mind.
I do like pancakes. I don't like
Before
waffles.
Before we had mirrors, we had pancakes.
Waffles are too crunchy.
There you go. Well, and when you look at them, the pancakes don't judge you back, so.
Is your mirror just judging you? Your mirror's like, you know what, Jack? Fuck you. I hope you have a terrible fucking day.
That's what it felt like every time.
Oh, no.
Never look down at a mirror.
Oh,
it will insult you.
My mirror is trying to upskirt me, you dirty perv.
Dirty perv!
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Anyways.
Where the fuck was I? Mimosa smell.
Mimosas, that's right. Baby.
So Rod and Pam do like a scientific experiment, and they go out in the hallway and are like, nope, doesn't smell like mimosa here. And then they go back in the room and then they sniff their way to the desk where the book is still flipping pages and they don't see this somehow.
Right.
And they're like, that's peculiar. That's odd. The smell of mimosa is strongest here.
It's weird.
Like, no shit. The lady's sitting at the desk.
Dummy.
So, Dr. Scott shows up and tells them they're all dumb as hell.
Listen, you stupid fucks. Look at this fucking book.
I wish he would have. He didn't, man.
Doctor.
He was too, his head was too in the clouds because he's so tall. He couldn't see down that far.
That's what it was.
At these mere mortals. Anyway. Dr. Scott shows up and tells them that Stella is at Miss Holloway's. And they're all like, what the fuck? So they like freak out about that. Pam then cold calls Miss Holloway and says, hey, we're heading over. And Miss Holloway's like, oh, that's good. That's fine.
Paul, if you were suspicious, why the fuck would you call? They are the dumbest vigilantes ever. Like,
it's 1940s polite.
Fuck that.
It's being polite.
I would not have done well in the 40s.
Well, and, you know, I think they should have taken your advice, because what that allows Holloway to do is make preparations. She, like, calls a bunch of people. Is like, get my car ready. It's around back. And, like, get Stella out here. She's making preparations there.
Exactly.
She brings Stella into her office, Miss Holloway does, and she says that you should go where you want to be, which is still windward, weirdly enough. And Holloway even says, don't tell your grandfather. Don't tell him that you're going. Like, she keeps that a secret. Dr. Scott, Pam, and Rod, like, burst in a little bit later into Holloway's office. And they're like, where the hell is Stella at? And Miss Holloway is like...
Well, they burst in and ask where Stella is. And Miss Holloway's like, you're too late. I've already put her on a train back. Which, so, like, they're both stupid because they call and say, we're on our way. And Miss Holloway immediately is like, ha-ha, here's my evil plot. Like, you guys are bad at this.
Yeah. Like, they were still working out the kinks for, like, protagonist and antagonist roles, I think, at that time. She also, like, just straight up insults Dr. Scott. Like, you're a shitty doctor. And he's just like, what the fuck? I'm way up here.
What did I do? And,
so, yeah, she says that she's on a train and basically it's like, I sent her to back to Windward. And she, if they push a little bit further on Holloway, she says, I actually sent Stella to the cliff. Like, knowing she now knows that, like, she's going to go try to kill herself, basically.
Mm-hmm. And she gets, like, this weird, creepy, vacant smile and just kind of stares off.
I just wrote, she's going a little cuckoo at this point because she's, like, talking to the Mary portrait in her office and, like, I did it for you. I rounded the edges. They're smooth. They're smooth edges now. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's all for you, Damien.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. A little bit. Mm-hmm. So this prompts Pam, Dr. Scott, and Rod to just race back to Windward to try to intercept Stella.
Stella! I love the line. She's like, she's crazy. Come on, let's get out of here.
Let's go!
Yeah, Rod's just like, she's... We're getting this information, and now she's just crazy. We're getting out of here.
She's insane. Let's go.
Let's go. Which, also, she is still in charge of a bunch of people. There are a bunch of people under this crazy banana pants lady's care.
That's scary, isn't it?
It is scary.
That's scary. It's almost like sanity retreated instead of Mary Meredith. Oh, come on.
What you did there.
Thank you, Herbert. Herbert saw that slow-witted, you know, connections to that. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, hindsight is 20/20, just like my vision, and a year I'll never live to.
Come on, Sid, come on!
Clap this horn. Can all be cut.
Yes, it can.
Boo!
That might be... Well, especially cut that. We don't hear the boos.
Oh, boo.
We're getting those from the audience. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Audience of me.
Yeah. This is a terrifying audience. So their next step. So we see Stella get dropped off by a taxi at Windward. Yeah. And she rings the doorbell. I get there is a doorbell.
Yeah.
She rings the doorbell. Mm-hmm. She rings the candle thing. It's weird that they have electricity for that, but not the candles. Anyway.
Yeah.
She arrives, she rings the doorbell, no one answers. She just goes inside because the door is locked. Whoop-de-doo.
Like,
so 1940s.
Everybody. Oh, Pam, Rick.
Nope. She goes up the stairs and hears a moaning, which if I ever entered a house and I heard moaning, I would keep going.
You'd be like, whoop, gotta go. This is not a place for me.
But then when the moaning starts calling your name, that's when you turn around. And that's what happens. So someone's calling her name.
Yeah.
And guess what? It's Gramps Beach.
Grandfather!
And he's very unwell. And he's just sitting in a chair. And he's like, you're in danger. I'm warning you're in danger. And he has like a view of the hallway. So he sees what's coming. And she's just like, what's up with you, Grandpa?
The grandfather, don't worry. We're together now. I'll take care of you. He's like, you're going to die.
She says, darling.
Oh, yes.
She says darling to her grandpa.
It's weird.
Kids. Actually, scratch that. People. If you're romantically involved, don't call your romantic other a kid. And if you're a granddaughter, don't call your grandfather a darling. That's fucking weird.
Darling, it's all right. We're together now. Nothing can hurt us. Don't worry, darling.
Shit.
Whereas he's like, Stella, there's a motherfucking ghost coming.
There's a fucking ghost. Yeah, so he sees the mist that Rod and the group saw earlier, and he's like, and he has a heart attack, I think.
I think so. I think he just died of fright.
Yeah. So Stella sees the ghost, and she closes her eyes, and she's like, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. You know, she doesn't say that. She says, this is not real. This is not a ghost. And then she kind of opens her eyes again, and then we hear her scream. So I guess the thing attacks her, the spirit or whatever. Yeah. And just as she's screaming, Pam, Rod, and Dr. Scott pull up in their car, and Stella is running out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And she runs straight to the cliff and goes to the edge where the dead tree is, which is like the marker of where her mom dies. And like the cliff just breaks off, and she slips and is only holding on by a root at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Rod and Dr. Scott are right behind her and pull her up. So all is well.
They really need to get her like a little collar, like an electric fence collar, so that she can't like,
yeah,
like can't run past a certain point, because this is just going to keep happening.
That would solve all these problems.
Yeah.
Like, don't try to kill yourself again. Just, we're going to put up this electric fence for you. Yeah, exactly. That's a good idea, Sid.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So as they pull her up, she says, my grandpa's dying. So they go up and try to attend to him. And
oh, grandfather's terribly sick. Please help him.
My darling is sick. My darling.
My darling grandfather is terribly ill.
Oh, my God. So they, you know, Dr. Scott rushes in because he's a goddamn doctor and he's, I mean, he could basically just reach the second floor from the first floor because he's so tall.
Dr. Scott is my favorite.
I love him. Mm-hmm. They're back inside and they're talking about everything that's just happened. And then the doors just kind of like burst open.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden Rod's like, what the fuck? And then they smell the perfume again. So it's like, oh God, it's not gone.
Well, and Dr. Scott also tells Stella like that her grandpa passed away. Like he's not.
Oh, he did as fuck.
Well, yeah. She didn't know that. Oh. She assumed he was fine.
I'm a dumb viewer. I knew that, so I thought she knew it.
She's like, no, girl, he did. He's gone.
So, yeah. Grandpa go die. And then the doors burst open. And then the perfume. And then it's the book again. Oh. We're back to the book.
Read your book.
And it's flipping pages. Like it's going crazy, like the wind's blowing.
Mm-hmm.
But it lands on a certain entry because Dr. Scott picks it up. He's like, oh, this child died from the measles, whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a second. Here's an entry that's relevant to our situation.
Wait a minute.
And he says that this is a passage about Carmel having a baby.
Carmel was pregnant.
Yep. There we go. So we learn, and it's, you know, Stella works this out in her mind that she's Carmel's kid, not
Mary's
kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then they hear this weird laughing, like throughout the house.
Oh my God, that was horrifying. I would not feel at peace if I heard that. I would feel threatened.
Well, they should have, because she wasn't fucking gone yet.
My God, that's spot on, chap.
Yeah, they hear the laughing and like, oh my God, the curse is lifted. Oh my God, everything's good.
Yeah, like, but Stella thinks her mom's at peace now that Stella knows the truth about who her mother is.
Right, right. But what we find out is that Rod goes to open those doors to like leave or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he immediately is like, bah! And he says, go the other way. So he like is freaked out by something and tells everyone to run and hide.
Mm-hmm.
And he opens the door and this is the best. This is the best thing ever. It is Rod giving a like a mafia monologue to the ghost. He's just basically like, yeah, see, you're not alive. We are alive. We want to be alive. So you go away, okay? You go away. Like that's his speech.
He laughs.
Like, you don't want to be here anymore.
He laughs and he's like, oh, you don't like laughing, do you? Well, this house is going to be filled with laughter and you can just get out. And then he throws the fucking candelabra at the ghost.
He throws the lit candelabra at the ghost and then doesn't check if the fires are out. Down. So he probably burned his fucking house down because he's an idiot.
Yes.
And everyone is at the front door like, Rod, we hear you monologuing crazily. Is everything okay? And he opens the door.
Who are you talking to?
My acting coach. So he is done. He opens the door. Everything's good. Everyone's happy. Both him and both Rod and Stella are together, mm-hmm. and both Pam and Dr. Scott are together.
Which I love.
And they're
love Pam and Dr. Scott together. I think that's a great matchup.
Yeah, if they can reach each other, Jesus.
Well,
so
I was just gonna say, what the fuck was I gonna say? Oh, yes, Pam is very smart and she's not afraid of anything. And Dr. Scott likes her as a person and a human being and takes her seriously.
I honestly think their relationship will go further than Rod and Stella.
Rod and the child? Yeah, me too.
Well, when you put it that way. Yeah.
She's 20.
Well, but Rod has like, so he's been a goofball this whole fucking movie. And he has the best line to end this movie. He says, he looks back because Stella's something like, you know, oh, I'm glad that's over. He's like, yeah, that could have been my mother-in-law. Like, intoning, like, yeah, if Mary was his, her mother, like, oh, God. What?
Like, oh, dodged a bullet. That was funny.
So, mother-in-law jokes were rampant in the 40s. Yes.
It was a good one, though.
Yes.
Well, and it makes...
It was pretty good.
It makes sense why the ghost kept, like, attacking Stella and trying to get her to kill herself and throw herself over, because Mary is not Stella's mother, and she doesn't like Stella, because that means her husband boned Caramel.
What?
What do you mean?
Caramel?
Carmel.
Carmel?
Carmel. Whatever. Carmel, yes.
He was banging the sweets, Carmel. You see?
He sure was.
He couldn't get off the sugars. Couldn't lay off the sugars, see?
Sweets to the sweets,
baby. Up his gums in that caramel.
Oh, God.
And diabetes.
Well, that would be pretty progressive for the 40s, honestly, if he was up to his gums in it.
Yes. Well, and it's very progressive to switch the script and say, like, oh, actually... The white girl is the Spanish gypsy's daughter instead of the white woman's daughter from south of London or whatever the fuck. So it was a very interesting turn. You know, I didn't expect that.
True
that. So said.
Yes.
I think we have gotten to the end. Now, I will say, like, I was kind of surprised that Stella lived. I thought she was going to die.
I kind of did, too.
And I don't want to say it would have been better if she did, but it would have been more in line with horror movies today where, like, someone has to die. Like, this movie didn't really have a lot of tragedy in it.
But it's in the style of the Gothic. It's more centered around, like, women and the household and the domesticity. So it doesn't surprise me, especially for a movie of the 40s, that it ended happy.
Okay.
It's kind of like that Shakespeare trope of, like, all comedies end in a marriage. So that didn't surprise... It would have been a different kind of movie if she died. Because this movie never really gets scary. It's like, ooh, kind of spooky, but like, it's not going to upset you.
No, and there was a point where Stella was, when she was in the mansion by herself at the very end of the movie, she goes to open the door because she keeps hearing her name and the moaning and stuff. That's when I thought some shit was going to go down. Like a screwed up face or like some kind of special effect where it's like, oh my God, that's insane. It was just her grandfather dying in the chair. Like, it was...
Yeah.
It was not what I expected.
This is a good movie for people who don't like scary movies, because it's pretty upbeat. There are a lot of funny little bits and...
A little comedy sprinkled in there.
Yeah, and it's not scary. Like, they do effects, which is cool for the 40s, but they're not scary effects.
No. They got the doors opening by themselves, doors slamming by themselves, the pages turning, the like, wispy mist ghost thing... Which they used a couple times, but
plus, who doesn't want to see Rick throw a candelabra through a ghost? Come on!
Honestly, that is the movie poster or whatever you want to
call
it.
I know, spoiler,
and it looks so action packed, yeah, and it's not like that at all. He's like a javelin throwing the candelabra. It's like, no,
it wasn't like that.
He more threw it out of being like scared. I think he made his like speech of like, "Go away, ghost," and then like, threw the candelabra. Expected it to do something.
Yes, exactly.
Could have had all that false advertisement back in the 40s. More candelabras thrown at ghosts in this movie than any other movie ever made.
Ta-da!
It's one, just one.
It's just the one.
A lot of candelabras lit, only one thrown.
But still technically true, more than the others.
That's right. And that's what matters. So, I don't know, Absolutely. This movie was fun.
It wasn't bad. I mean, it was, with these older movies, I kind of have to temper my expectations. That sounds bad, but I know that they're not going to be as, like, as crazy as horror movies today are. So you kind of have to account for that, I think.
Yeah, crazy and creepy.
So, Sid.
Yes.
Now, since everyone survived.
Yes.
And, you know, I think they all want a drink at this point. At this point,
yeah.
Speaking. What would you have our Final Femmes drink?
Okay, so I looked up the Uninvited, like, themed cocktails, and I could not find anything, which annoyed me. So then I looked up a popular drink for 1944. So I found on distiller.com how to make the original 1944 Mai Tai, because Mai Tais were very popular at the time. So... Let's see. You need 1 ounce of lime juice, a half ounce of orange curacao, 1/4 orgeat syrup. I don't know what that is. 1/4 simple syrup, 1 ounce Oh, I'm sorry. These are all ounces. So 1 ounce of aged Jamaican rum and 1 ounce of rum. What the fuck is that? Anyways.
Rum?
No, it's rum. It's R-H-U-M. Where's it?
Oh.
I don't know, maybe it's rum. Huh. So you should.
That's a...
What?
No, I don't know what that is. So if it is supposed to be rum, I don't. Never heard it pronounced like that.
I think it. Okay, wait. Maybe it is.
It's like a different type of rum or something.
Yeah, I think so. So you shake all the ingredients over ice. You pour it into a double old-fashioned glass, fill to the rim with crushed ice, garnish with a spent lime shell and a sprig of mint. Ta-da! So Mai Tai. Ding!
Bing! That sounds good.
Yeah.
I've never had a Mai Tai.
They're tasty.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that I chose something different because I almost went that route. Because there was like a whole history of like they started in 1944, the Mai Tais and stuff. And I'm like, yeah. And then I looked at the ingredients. I'm like, I can't pronounce that shit. And so I abandoned it.
But I did.
And so I'm glad you took up that mantle.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, what I did is picked another unpronounceable fucking thing.
Oh, here, good.
And it is going to be a St. Austell Brewery Coref Cornish Lager.
Wow.
And that is brewed in the Cornwall area, and apparently Coref is just means beer in the Cornish language, so it's like spot on.
Okay.
But it's just a lager made from barley grown in Cornwall, and it has like a clean, crisp bite. That's about the only description I can get. It seems like a pretty light beer.
That sounds good.
Yeah. But I figured, you know, this whole group of lads and sasses would head up to their local pub and they'd slap down some penny farthings and they'd say, hey, barkeep, get me a bloody lager, bitch.
Not lads and sasses. Do you mean lasses?
No. It was something different in the 40s, Sid.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
I have no fucking idea. I'm sure I fucked it up.
It's because all that sass.
All that sass.
Yeah,
baby.
Well. It you know, which derives from the hysterics, which everyone thought that they were going through, which is just insane that, like, this movie is full of that. Like, oh my God, she's going to go crazy. It's like, okay.
Rod was the only one going crazy.
Which was great. I love that.
Yeah.
It was so good.
It was. All
right. So, there you go. We got a nice Cornish lager on my end here.
Love it.
You better.
I probably don't. I don't like beer. Anyways.
I don't know if I do either.
What's our next movie? Jack.
Our next goddamn movie is Final Destination.
Yeah!
Can you believe that, Sid? Why, you're so happy for this movie.
Yeah. I don't even remember if I like it that much. I do. I just like that it bothers you.
This is like a typical 90s movie, so I'm sure there's going to be some like fucking some badass motherfucking Billy Loomis in this up in this shirt that's like the bad guy that all the women are attracted to.
I don't.
Sid's looking in her mind like they're.
I was like, I don't think so, but I can't swear to that. I could be wrong. It's been a long time since I've seen it. I just remember having fun.
I'll bet you he wears a leather jacket. I'm just gonna put that out there. And he smokes.
Probably. Probably. He's there. He probably does. Where can people?
No, shut up. I'm gonna do it.
Did you just tell me to shut up? Did you just motherfucking tell me to shut up, Jack? I would fucking move if I were you. I have already booked plane tickets to come to your home and find you. This is the end of the road for you, my friend. Everybody say goodbye to Jack.
I'm skipping town,
yeah,
sass.
Good
I'm
luck.
Town.
I'll hunt your ass down.
Watch out. She'll throw a candelabra at you.
I'll do more than that.
I'm dodgy, see? Dodgy.
You're going to die.
All I was going to say, I'm sorry, Sid. All I was going to say, because I think you didn't have faith in me I was going to say these, but
okay.
If you want to email us, especially Sid's conduct in this fucking episode, Jesus. finalfempodcast@gmail.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Or you can reach out at Instagram at finalfempodcast.
Beautiful.
Is that what you were going to say?
Yes! Is there anything people could do to help our podcast grow?
You can. Actually, all you can do is rate 5 stars because all the other star buttons are broken. So get on whatever apps you do.
Yeah.
Don't even bother. There's a bug. I put in a bug ticket for this. You can't do below 5 stars, so you have to do 5 stars. Okay. It's only for our podcast.
Yeah, only for us.
Yes, yes. So keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Okay. I may not murder you. We'll see.
It's okay. I don't think we're going to have an in-person one for a while, so I'm safe for a little bit.
Safe for a minute.
I can build up the debt.
Yeah. There you go.
But yeah. So we will be watching Final Destination. What year is that from? I don't think we can... I'm sure people will watch the right one, okay. But it's Final Destination 1.
I guess 95.
Which is from 95? Thank you, Sid.
Is it? I just guessed. I don't know.
Oh.
Right. I just guessed.
I was just taking your word for it.
No, maybe it's 97.
It was 2000.
Really?
Wow.
Shit.
We're going to watch a pre-9/11 movie. Oh. God damn.
Final Destination came out in 2000? What? Weird. Okay.
Anyway, so that will be our next film, Final Destination, 2000 people.
Yeah.
So if you want to watch that before we discuss it, by all means.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to listen to us and then watch it, by all means, doing that too. So we will see you next time when we watch that movie.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.